Welcome to the Matt Hummer Podcast, episode 94. I'm Mo, and I'm here with Elle. How are you, Elle?
Hey, Mo.
Seamlessly turned your mic on in time.
Just turned my mic on.
That was probably my fault. I didn't realise it was off or not. Sorry. Stitched you up live on air.
Thanks.
Absolute nonsense.
I appreciate it.
It's starting to get festive out there, ladies and gentlemen. Just a couple of weeks left before Christmas. Next week, we will be doing our big end of year podcast, of course, where we go through all the biggest stuff and best stuff and maybe some of the worst stuff that happened in the world of metal this year. Before all that, though, don't forget that the latest issue of Metal Hammer is out right now. It is a huge and emotional tribute to The Rev, Avenged Sevenfold's iconic drummer who left this earth 10 years ago this month. We talked to Avenged Sevenfold about his amazing life and career and the legacy he left behind. And there's also our top 50 albums of the year in there. There's loads of brand new interviews with tons of great bands. And the issue comes packaged with a very nice Rev tribute art print done by esteemed and brilliant artist Lamort. It also comes with a bonus Avenged Sevenfold magazine, counting down their 20 greatest songs ever and the stories behind them. There's some new insight from the band in that as well, by the way. Also comes with an end of year best of 2019 CD and a 2020 calendar featuring a ton of awesome and very huge names in rather lush, beautiful shots that we've done over the last couple of years. All in the new issue out now. We also have a couple of Five Finger Death Punch bundles featuring hand-signed lyric sheets by the band, huge back patch, posters, stickers, all sorts of stuff in that. So go to tinyurl.com/buyhammer to pick up the Five Finger Death Punch bundles. I should say that the Rev issues are now sold out online, so thanks to everyone for your amazing support on that. If you're in the UK and you want to get hold of one, you're going to have to go to tinyurl.com/findhammer to find your nearest shop. I mentioned Christmas very briefly there, Elle. You got your Christmas on in very on-brand style, I feel, last week.
It did.
You went to see The Nightmare Before Christmas live. How was that?
It was so...
Surely the most...
Good.
Mock metal, definitely the most goth Christmas movie ever.
It was so good and it was so magically, gothically magical.
Can you describe exactly what they did?
Yeah.
Because I can't quite work out how that would work.
I got a ticket without really knowing what I was going to, just because I love The Nightmare Before Christmas. So I was like, I have to go and see this thing. So we got in there and... they'd made Wembley into an entirely seated venue. They put down the floor seating, so everyone was sitting down. So it was like a proper kind of show.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was like more of a performance.
I suppose it makes sense.
And they had a whole orchestra on stage. And then they had people... they had five people who were doing various voices for characters. And then they had Danny Elfman... and they had a couple of the other characters, like the original voices from the film as well, which was really cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. So what they did was they basically opened with the main theme, which was cool. And they had a massive
Halloween
screen.
Or the...
No, like the sort of...
The Danny Elfman
like the opening
composition.
One. Yeah. And they had a screen at the back... one at the top of the stage and two either side, and they showed bits of the film and they sort of had various scenes, and then when it came to a song they would play the song live with the orchestra and they'd get the character actors to sing them. Danny Elfman was just incredible. He was just... I've never seen him perform live before, and I don't think I've ever even seen any video footage of him either. And he's amazing. Like, he acts with his whole face and his body. It's not like he was just singing. He was actually, like, being Jack Skellington.
Amazing.
And he had a pinstripe suit on as well. Like, all the singers were dressed up in sort of Nightmare-style outfits. And there was one guy in the orchestra who had his face painted. I just loved him. It was like... You'd have called him, like, Orchestra Lad or something.
Sure.
Don't say it like you would.
Sounds
have
like
done.
The kind of thing I'd say.
You definitely would have done. Like, it was just... he was so brilliant. I just was massively blown away by his performance. Basically, he's a true kind of showman, and not only did he write that music and perform it, he can go on stage and perform it too, which is a true talent. And they had a Catherine O'Hara there who plays Sally and also the kid Shock. She was amazing. She came on and sang her parts, and it was really sweet actually, because she seemed not shy exactly, a little bit shy and very kind of touched to be there. And her demeanor was kind of more sort of shy and retiring, but then she snapped into character when she had to sing in the character. And her and Danny on stage were really sweet together, and when they sang there was real chemistry there. And at the end of the film, and they have a song they sing together, and I almost cried because it was just really sweet.
Wow, amazing.
It was just really sweet. And yeah, they had it was just great. Like, and then at the end as well, after it finished, Danny Elfman did the Oogie Boogie song, like the Cab Calloway style one, Mr. Oogie Boogie, and that was brilliant. It was just, I think the standout thing from it was just how happy everybody was. Like, everybody was just actually really into it. It was really celebratory and fun and joyous and really engaging. It's the kind of thing that could have just felt really flat, just having an orchestra and sort of sitting in front of it. Obviously that is a concert, but you know what I mean? Like The Nightmare Before Christmas, it could have felt really flat, and it didn't. It felt really exciting and cool, and I could just watch it 10 times over and over because I just loved it.
Bloody fantastic. Yeah. What a festive treat. They didn't bring Tim Burton out or anything, did they?
No, they didn't.
Because I saw an interview with him that seemed to suggest he was in London at around the same time, but I think they did it in
LA because Jeremy, our photographer, he replied to something I put on social media.
Big up Jeremy Saffer.
And he said something about in LA they had done an extra encore and like Tim Burton had come out and stuff. So maybe LA, they sort of had the full LA treatment. But right. I should say it was the London Philharmonic Orchestra as well. So, nice. I mean, any orchestras are usually amazing.
They're all good.
Well, basically, if you can, if you can get to that level where you're playing in an orchestra, you're going to be a fantastic musician. But it's quite special as well, seeing the London Philharmonic. And I'd forgotten, there are so many bits, even though I've seen the film loads of times, somehow seeing it again in a different context just really brought it to life. And I'd forgotten some of the bits that I actually really love. Like, I love the snake, who's like the Christmas stocking. Then he comes along and like eats the tree later
on. That's awesome.
And I just forgot how much I love that snake. Like, I just came out of it and was like Googling the snake. I was like, I know someone
that has a massive Christmas decoration of that. I'm talking about Halloween decoration. And I mean, literally like 10 foot, it's absolutely huge.
Are you talking about the sandworm? Because you can buy sandworms from Beetlejuice that are really big.
No, I'm talking about the snake. Nightmare Before Christmas.
I want one so badly.
Yeah,
I just
awesome.
Want the giant snake. Like
the stocking snake.
I also love when I Googled him, there's a little page about him. And I really like the description. It says, the giant snake has no name and plays a minor part. The giant snake.
on the snake.
The giant snake is an enormous snake. I know. It's just great though. Love the giant
Hilarious.
Snake. It was just, yeah. What more can I say? That it was just super heartwarming and brilliant, and all these talented people together in one place. I feel really lucky to have seen it.
Very cool.
Yeah, I loved it.
Big up Tim Burton and Danny Elfman and everyone involved in that. Classic! If that's not on your to-watch Christmas list, you're failing at life. Huge breaking news as we just came in to record the podcast today. Knotfest is finally coming to the UK in August.
Absolutely massive.
Slipknot's festival will be coming to the Milton Keynes Bowl on August 22nd. A huge, huge deal indeed. Good to see the Milton Keynes Bowl being back in action as well. That's badass.
I'm literally putting it in my calendar right now.
Fuck yeah.
Wait, say it again.
Slipknot Knotfest.
August
22nd.
22nd.
Milton Keynes.
Saturday, August 22nd.
Hell yeah. Slipknot will be playing. We expect a full bill to be announced in the coming weeks and months after that. So that's huge news indeed, isn't it?
Interesting,
because that's going to be... Isn't that going to be Reading weekend?
I think they might usually have those the weekend after. It's usually around the bank holiday, isn't it?
I think that might be the bank holiday, though.
No, the bank holiday is on August the 31st. I can tell you this because I've just opened my calendar to put Slipknot Knotfest in it.
All right, so the weekend before. Wow. Interesting. So yeah, that's a massive, massive deal indeed.
What are they going to do? That's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, if they're going to do what they've done in Knotfest in the US and they bring the, like, the museum over and all the masks and all that kind of cool historical stuff as well, all the weird stuff around site, I mean, it could just be absolutely fantastic. So exciting to have Knotfest in the UK. We are all in on that. And you can bet that we'll be the very, very first to be on everything else in terms of their plans. More bands announced, all the rest of it. So stay tuned to metalhammer.com on that. In other news, if you picked up the latest issue of Metal Hammer, you may know this already, but we officially announced online that Tool's Fear Inoculum has been crowned the Metal Hammer Album of the Year. And what that means is that it topped our critics poll. So we got everyone who contributes to Metal Hammer to send in their top 20 albums of the year. And that's what we then, get those results to put together our top 50 albums of the year. And by a distance, actually, and I don't say that lightly, because this was a year where we had heavyweight releases by Korn and Slipknot and Rammstein. But it was, not unanimous, I guess, but it was a, pretty significant margin of victory that saw Fear Inoculum get voted the album of the year. So what do you think that says about the world, Elle?
A lot of people like Tool.
Sound like I was being sarcastic then, but I wasn't. I was just asking the resident Tool fan what she thought.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that it actually happened after 13 years. And it's funny because we obviously put the results of the poll online and I was looking at the Facebook comments, and as usual, there are loads of people going, "It's really rubbish. Why have people vote for it? Oh, I hate Metal Hammer," etc.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. There's loads of
Justice for Health. That was my choice. More on that next week.
Someone came out and said there's loads of amazing smaller bands that have come out, but clearly this isn't the page for that. But to those people, I would say look at our Albums of the Year feature, because there's a ton of alternative, underground, smaller, different bands in there.
Venom Prison, underground death metal bands, made our top five. I'm not going to spoil the whole thing because we're going to go through more of it next week.
Lingering Notas in the very close place.
In the top 10,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a. It's an awesome list, and yeah.
But yeah, Tool. I think it's a funny one, isn't it? Because there was so much build up to it. And then the first time I heard it, I wasn't really overwhelmed. I was just kind of like, I was in a room of people.
Just whelmed.
Yeah, I was just I was merely whelmed. I was in a room of people, and a lot of those people afterwards were like, "This is amazing." And I was like, I feel okay. I didn't really feel anything. Sure. And then as I listened to it more and more, then that's where I really got into it. And now it feels like an old friend. But I think they really deserve that position because they haven't spent 13 years working on it, no matter what everybody says. You know, they've been doing a lot of other things. They spent the last 4 or 5 years working on it. And it is a really comprehensive album by a group of people who are very talented. And they know what they're doing as Tool as well. It's got all the kind of elements of a Tool album that people look for. Mm. It's got polyrhythms, maybe not really distinctive vocals, a bit of sort of numerology stuff in there, lyrics about
riffs,
the self and the humanity, riffs,
grooves.
Exactly.
Unbelievable drum performance on it as well, as always.
Yeah, it's got all that stuff in there. And they've gone sort of a little bit, they've changed with the times as well. They've not just put out the same thing. They've put out something that reflects where they are and where music is, etc. So I think they do deserve it.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, it is a democratic process in this specific instance of how we decide these things. And if you're a big Tool fan, that album's going to be in your end of year list. And there's a lot of Tool fans at Metal Hammer. So
like we said,
go.
It's democratic. Like, again, I think we'll go through this in our end of the year podcast, but it wasn't actually the album that we chose for our number ones.
No, Elle and I didn't choose. Tool's in your top three though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Tool did not make my list at all, actually.
There you go.
Controversial. Not because I don't think it's brilliant, but just because, they're maybe not quite at the centre of my personal taste. But hey, that's how magazines work, guys. Bloodstock have announced more names. That bill is really just getting better and better and better. Saxon, Orange Goblin, Conjurer. What a trio of like British heavy metal awesomeness that is. Night Flight Orchestra and Unleash the Archers have all joined the bill. If I'm not mistaken, Orange Goblin, Saxon and Judas Priest are all playing on the same day, which is pretty fucking awesome. That's a lot of British heavy metal thunder right there.
Yeah.
Very, very excited for that. Can't beat Orange Goblin, Saxon, Living Legends, Conjurer, one of the best young bands going. Nightflight Orchestra, cheesy. And Unleash the Archers doing some cool stuff as well. So yeah, solid addition for them. Well done, Bloodstock. That's in August. Tickets, Google Bloodstock and you go to the Bloodstock website and find them there. What else is going on in the world, Elle?
Well,
in the world of classic rock.
Yeah, more
shout out
rock.
Our sister Mag.
So Twisted Sister's Dee Snider apparently has some intel on the new AC/DC album. According to Dee, not only will the record feature all four surviving AC/DC members, which are Angus Young, Cliff Williams, Phil Rudd, and Brian Johnston, but will also include tracks recorded by Malcolm Young, who passed away in 2017.
This is very exciting indeed. Firstly,
so there's unreleased material, basically.
Yes, some unreleased Malcolm material alongside, I think, new material as well. Malcolm's nephew has been a part of the band since Malcolm, prior to his passing. Once he stopped touring, his nephew kind of came in the band. And so he might be involved on that level as well. But yeah, basically it means we're getting new AC/DC music. According to Dee Snider, anyway. we don't have any more intel on this apart from what Dee is telling everybody.
Yeah, we could be repeating libel here.
Could we?
Well, no.
Don't say that. You have a heart to give a jump then. Oh my God. Yeah, we could be repeating hot gossip, I suppose. But Dee was on Twitter the other day and he replied to a few people in response to something he said about AC/DC. And the long and short of it is that there is new stuff coming and it's going to involve stuff from Malcolm, which is fantastic. And you know, will make it for quite an emotional listen, I'm sure. And also, Brian Johnston is apparently on the album as well, which is fucking awesome, if true. I hope it's true. Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, people have strange opinions about AC/DC these days because, you know, Malcolm stopped touring and then he passed away. Brian left the band. Axl toured with him for a while. A lot of people weren't sure if we should be getting AC/DC in that form. As far as I'm concerned, as long as Angus is happy to go and the rest of the band are into it and it feels in the spirit of AC/DC, let's fucking have it because they're one of the greatest rock bands of all time. So there, that's my opinion.
Fair.
Thank you for allowing my AC/DC rant.
You're welcome.
Speaking of amazing rock bands, Aerosmith have announced a European tour for 2020, including stops in Manchester and in London in July. Did you see the rumour about them at Glastonbury?
I did not. Why don't you enlighten me?
So just before the dates got announced, or around the same time, a photo spread around Twitter that someone posted saying it was taken from a screenshot from a press thing that got sent out to their fan club but then kind of got redacted, that had them appearing at Glastonbury on the Saturday, and it seemed pretty legit, but then a few people spotted that there was a couple of spelling errors in the dates elsewhere and it all became a bit dubious, and now that all seems to have disappeared again, so it might be bullshit. But I found the idea of Aerosmith being at Glastonbury fascinating, A, because I would never have predicted that booking, and B, because from what I understand, the date they were rumoured or listed for in that photo was the same day Paul McCartney's headlining. So I don't know where or how that would work.
Why do you find it a weird booking? I find it a completely normal booking.
Because as much as they are, you know, Rock, which does have a place at Glastonbury, I mean, how many bands could you even name of their type that have ever played Glastonbury?
Like, I just think they're an establishment rock band and everyone knows them, so why wouldn't they? It's like a Guns N' Roses type thing.
See, I think Guns N' Roses would be an amazing shout at Glastonbury, but I would be shocked if they actually got booked. I think it would make total sense and I would love to see it. If I could book Glastonbury, I'd throw the money at them and get them there in a heartbeat. But they're a little bit more outside of what you would probably call the mainstream establishment compared to someone like The Who or Rolling Stones or... You know, Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses always felt a bit more like our bands. You know what I mean? A bit more rock and roll and kind of...
I literally wouldn't question it if I saw it on the lineup. Yeah. It wouldn't even cross my mind. Like, yeah, you're sort of digging down into more nuance than I would have given them.
But bands like them have never played before. Motley Crue have never played Glastonbury. Like, you know, Whitesnake have never played Glastonbury. AC/DC have never played Glastonbury. But Rolling Stones play it and The Who play it. And I'm just trying to think of other examples.
Coldplay.
Even Foo Fighters makes more sense because they're more like, you know, your mate you went to uni with who thinks he's like rock music but doesn't actually like rock music that much, his favourite band. So snobby of me. I like Foo Fighters. Sorry.
Snobby.
Sorry.
That last record was a banger.
I reckon Aerosmith are one of those bands that a load of people like my mum would say she doesn't actually know any Aerosmith songs, but then you probably sing some at them and they'll go, oh yeah, that one.
They've done
oh, yeah,
stuff
that
like
one.
This before though. Have they not done like BST or something similar? They've done a Hyde Park one.
I feel like that's a bit different though, because that those festival lineups seem to almost be their own little mini things, because Black Sabbath did one of them and half of that lineup would never have played Glastonbury, I don't think.
I'm looking on the internet.
When it was like Sabbath, Faith No More, Soundgarden, Motorhead. Motorhead did play Glastonbury, to be fair.
Aerosmith.
I mean, to be clear, I am all for Aerosmith and more rock bands playing Glastonbury, as we know from when we talked about the metal lineup at Glastonbury earlier this year. But yeah, and also, I guess, would they play as main support to Paul McCartney? How would that work? I just find it a very interesting dynamic because they are one of the biggest rock bands of all time.
They did so. Download in 2017. They did Clapham Common Calling Festival in 2014. Download in 2014. O2 Arena in 2010. Hyde Park Calling in 2007.
Yeah.
They've not I think it would here work. As much as you've think they have, actually. I just kind of figured they were always around.
Well, they played Download a couple of times, haven't they? So I think that makes them more fresh in our memory. But I guess that's kind of my point, actually. Aerosmith have played Download a couple of times, which is very much like our festival, but they don't really do those kind of free-for-all fests as much, I don't think. But yeah, anyway, they sent a load of tour dates to fans this morning, apparently, and it listed Glastonbury. There is a graphic that you can still find if you look for it that lists them on June 27th, which is the Saturday of the festival, which Paul McCartney is headlining. So, I mean, if Glastonbury can get Aerosmith not even headlining, that's a pretty amazing booking. But to me, they're a headline band wherever they play, so I'm not quite sure how that would work. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Let's do some reader questions.
Okay.
God damn it. Facebook.com/MetalHammerReaders. Coming up to 3,000 people on there now. It's lovely. And everyone's so nice to each other on there. So come and hang out with us. Do a question now.
Okay. Materials89 asks, who actually listens to Steel Panther? And what, if any, is their key to sustaining their career and hair products?
Well, judging by the tickets they still sell and the streaming numbers they still do, a lot of people still listen to Steel Panther.
Yeah, I mean, they're funny. Like, that's the point of them.
Yeah, they're funny, they're fun, they actually write good songs. Even their latter stuff is still better than 99% of the stuff those original bands they parody are putting out.
I mean, we've talked about
it's
in
just
the
a
past,
fun night out, isn't it?
We've talked about in the past, like, whether the joke's worn thin and whether it's funny, like, still funny, or whether it's just a bit old now. But I think the audiences turning up for the shows are still kind of into it, so they're obviously doing something right. I think the fact that they were on, what am I trying to say? When they were doing the tribute band stuff in
Metal
Vegas.
School.
Was it Vegas? Do they have a residency in Vegas? Something like that?
You mean before they were Steel Panther?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. They were on the strip
like
a lot.
Yeah. And
LA.
They're like, I think they were doing a lot of, we've done like 20 features on them and I literally can't remember, but I think they had some kind of residency. And so they, for years and years and years, they'd been doing what they do now and perfecting it, so when they did a parody of it, it felt authentic and also like they were talented. And having met them, they're really down to earth and nice as well. They're
Totally.
Like their characters at all.
No, they're really good. They're just like, you know, they are playing characters. How much they can blur, you know, how much those lines can be blurred when you've got a live band on stage and there's girls actually getting up in their underwear on stage. That's where it gets a bit weird for me because I'm like,
wait,
are you taking the piss out of these bands or are we actually these bands now? But I still find them as people hilarious and it, you know, the most of the actual humour is still self-deprecating. It's not like, it's mostly taking the piss out of themselves as, you know, the characters of aging rock stars and whatever.
Yeah, and it's meant to be the most over-the-top stuff possible. It's not meant to
exactly.
be real or anything.
And if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. Yeah, remember that, kids.
But hair products,
So anyway, yeah, the key to sustaining their career is clearly just still being a great live band and putting out music that resonates with the people that like them. Hair products, I don't know. Look at the state of mine. I can't fucking talk.
Yeah, your hair's...
Well, mine's got to start going back because my girlfriend's a beauty editor and she sorts me out, so thanks.
I would say that the style of yours right now is dishevelled.
Sure. That makes it sound cool. I'll take that. I'll take that. Why not?
I like to think that they've got hair products like with puns, like sex pun hair products. Like they've got a hairspray called like, oh, I've dug myself into a hole now. I can't think of anything. Quick, do a pun, a sex pun on a hairspray.
Oh, I don't know.
No spray, no lay.
That was good. Well done. That's way better than I want to come out with. Or maybe they have good wigs.
Can't say that.
I don't actually know that. Wigs. I'm just envious of their hair. At least some of them definitely don't have wigs. They've got fucking banging locks. But
banging
like I said,
locks. That can be the name of your shampoo.
I'm just speculating. I've never been behind the curtain on that kind of thing, and nor would I want to. So
banging locks also serves as a sex pun.
It does. It does. Banging locks hairspray. Kiel Eva Ali asks, haters. How many haters does a band need to have to be able to consider themselves successful?
10 haters.
10 haters. Done. Now nah, I'll
go
for more
than
that.
This could be like Sesame Street.
I think
the counts.
One hater. I think
exactly.
I think you got to be probably in the low hundreds. Do you know what I mean? Because you've got to have enough haters to actually know that you've got them. One person standing at the back of the gig not liking you doesn't really count. It's got to be like a notable, like, I'll tell you what, you need to have enough haters so that when Matt Hummer posts about you, people stream onto our Facebook page and go, what are you posting about them? That's how many haters you need.
If you've got any level of success, you've also got haters. That's just how it works.
100%.
For like every 10 people that love you, you're going to have 2 people that think you're shit.
Yeah.
Even if there's no reason behind that whatsoever.
It is impossible to be exposed to thousands of people en masse and not have people that dislike you. Whatever you do. No one is universally loved in this world. Maybe apart from David Attenborough.
It's like getting on the train or the bus in December to March. At some point, you're going to catch a cold.
Yeah. In that weird comparison, sure. I can tell someone's got illness on the brain. Elle's been in the office going, I don't want to catch a cold before Christmas.
Yeah, I've been taking loads and loads of vitamins and drinking loads of water and
not
getting
going
out fresh air and like
just getting back home at 6, staying under a blanket and then rolling out for work and repeat.
I've been like not sitting on the tube if somebody coughs when I get on. Like, don't you dare give me your cough germs.
I thought you meant like not even getting on the tube. Like you get to go and you hear, forget it. Move on. I'll get on the next one. Forget it.
If someone sat down next to me and cough loads, I might legit get up.
I mean, yeah, that's understandable.
I do not want to get
ill. The tube's a disgusting place.
I do not want to get ill before Christmas.
No. And if you do have a cold, keep it to yourself. Some Christmas advice.
Podcasts can't transmit cold, so it's fine.
Exactly.
You're okay with us.
Let's do the next question.
Joe Walker says, what's the most annoying... Sorry, I'll start that again. Joe Walker says, what's the more annoying type of fan? Number one, the gatekeeper that insists you can only be a fan if you like the band's earliest work. Or number two, the sycophant that insists you should always support the band regardless of how they change their style and that not liking change makes you not a true fan.
Both can be a little annoying, but I would say without a shadow of doubt, the gatekeeper is more annoying.
I was
going to
say the gatekeeper.
I don't think it's even a competition because to me, being that level of gatekeeper can actually be damaging to, it can be damaging to the scene. I think it can be damaging, you know, if you're a fan, I'm thinking if someone's a music fan and they've just got into a band, but they got into on a later album and then you go up to someone, the first thing he says is like, oh God, you're not a fan. Like, you haven't heard that. Oh my God, you haven't heard their B-sides from 1980. Oh, I thought you were a fan. Like that would put most people off.
Totally.
Whereas someone who literally just likes a band, regardless of what they do, yeah, that can be annoying as well. I mean, I think it's good to have balance and to be able to recognize when bands aren't up to their best. I guess it's just about attacking other people, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Do what you want, but just don't have a go at other people.
Just leave people alone. Don't ruin people's fun. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If someone's got into a band and they're really enjoying it, why would you make them feel bad? Why wouldn't you say, hey, that's great, you've just got into this band. Like, you know, there's also written this amazing album you may not have heard. It's your lucky day. You get to hear even more instead of just shitting on someone for
absolutely
not hearing something.
I think loads of people are guilty of it as well. I know I was guilty of it when I was a bit younger and maybe a bit more insecure and trying to, like, you know, prove that I knew the most about metal and all that kind of stuff.
I always hated people like you, Merlin.
Well, I wasn't overly horrible to people, but I do remember telling my mate about how good Heaven and Hell were because I'd gone to see them live. And he was like, oh yeah, I went into HMV to like try and find Heaven and Hell albums. And I couldn't find any. And I was like, oh my God, you idiot. Like, it's because they're named after Ronnie James Dio with Black Sabbath. You should have been looking at Black Sabbath circa 1980 to 83. Oh my God. And then afterwards, I felt like a real dick for doing it. And I was just like, why didn't I just tell him that without being a prick about it.
Dio shamed
him. I probably put him off getting into Dio. It's a really wanky thing to do. So don't do it, kids. Don't be like 22-year-old me or whatever.
I don't really mind people that say you should support a band regardless of how they change their style. It's not as annoying because if you do really like a band, there is something to that. Like if you are obsessed with Slipknot and then they change what they sound like, yeah, maybe you don't like it, but maybe you go, well, you know, they've had a 20-year career and they want to try something different, so why shouldn't they? Again, you don't have to like it, but, like, you could see why they do it.
Yeah, although I guess, again, don't use that to turn around and call someone else not a true fan.
Yeah, like, totally.
That would definitely annoy me as well. if I was like, I'm not sure about the new Marilyn Manson album or something. Like me and you talk about this, like Elle quite often will love something by like, I don't know, Korn or someone. Like Korn and Manson are two bands we sometimes disagree on a bit. And sometimes I'll be like, no, this is the best one. And sometimes you'll be like, no, this is the best thing they've ever done. And like, we've never like attacked each other over it, to my knowledge. That last Manson album you liked a lot more than me. But yeah. I wasn't like, oh, you're such a poser for liking this album when you did this back then. And you weren't like, you're a prat because why don't you like him? You should be a true fan and support him. You just get on. Because we have to, because we're colleagues.
Because we're paid to.
Because we're paid to be friends.
Hey, you said I was your best friend.
No, I said I was your best friend.
Okay.
No. Yeah, just be nice to each other, guys. It's good to be into music. And it's more important now than ever to get more people into metal. So if you know someone that's a fan of a band that you think is shit but are loosely in the realms of our world, don't go up to them and go, oh, that's shit. Go up to them and go, oh, you like that. You might like this. Check this stuff out. Don't push it on them. And if they don't want to get into it, that's fine. But just let's open people's minds instead of closing doors. Well, that sounded good.
That was like something off Instagram.
I should put that on a poster or something.
Put it on like a really brutal...
Don't close minds, open doors.
Put it on like a really brutal picture of like a fucked up brain or something.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Make it a metal meme.
Maybe I'll do that. Joe Fleischer asks, what was your favourite show this year in a venue of less than 1,000 people? Better yet, best with just about 100 people. I had to look quite hard for this and I felt guilty about that. So I need to get up to some more intimate shows next year, I think.
My best with just about 100 people is a bit of a cheat because it was The Who at the Mongolian Embassy. And obviously we were invited to go and watch them there. It wasn't general admission. The Who were just right there with their instruments. And then there were a collection of a few journalists there from Metal Hammer, Classic Rock, Prog, and a couple of other industry people just watching The Who play. And that was really cool because they've all got such interesting instruments and a great sound. And it was at the Mongolian Embassy and they had the Mongolian ambassador come and introduce them. And that was really cool. Apart from that, I talked.
Yeah, that sounded amazing.
It was really cool. Apart from that, a gig that I went to that was very underattended that I talked about on this podcast was Jared Threaten at the Underworld with his band Threaten.
Shouldn't have been that much under 1,000 people, but it was.
Yeah, it was about 30 or something. That was weird. I'm glad I went to see it. I wrote a massive piece about it online. So if you're interested, go to metalhammer.com and read that. It's mostly a Q&A with Jared asking about Threaten and... yeah, like how he's gonna take it forward and what that gig was all about, because it was such a weird gig. It was just 30 people in a room, hired hands on stage playing instruments, a couple of dummies playing on stage as well, and it was all being
filmed. Talking about the band, guys.
It was all being filmed for a documentary he's putting
together. Come on. Ignored by Jared, I believe it.
Yeah, that was weird. And then ones that I've really enjoyed in slightly bigger venues but still small, there was Cancer Bats and Underside at the 100 Club, which is great.
Nice.
I was ill that time actually, so I was sort of had to stand at the back and just sniffle, But Underside, band from Nepal, fantastic. Cancer Bat's always a party band. That was very good. And Swallow the Sun at the Underworld was great as well. I was meant to pick
one. Oceans of Slumber as well, wasn't
four.
It?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was just a really good kind of wintry, intimate gig.
Nice.
Probably talked about all of these on the podcast, actually. So sorry, guys. Bit of repetition there.
Well, that's all right. That's what we're here for. My best of less than 1,000 was probably, I saw the O2 Islington Academy, saw Girls Word. That was a really cool, interesting experience. A bit of a different vibe from Gal. I've seen him with Gorgoroth a few times, but never seen him doing the Girls Word stuff, so that was cool. And I got to see Tribulation at that gig, and you can really see again how far they're coming on.
I love seeing them the other day.
And I just discovered for the first time, You Are The... again, I still haven't learned how to pronounce that properly, but really cool atmospheric black metal band, who I raved about a bit on the podcast afterwards. So that was cool.
What are they called?
Uada, like you or Uada, Uada.
Don't know.
Uada.
Don't know.
Let's just call them Uada. So yeah, they were really cool. In terms of less than 100, I went to a couple of the awesome Bloodstock Metal to the Masses shows at Big Red. Long may it rest in peace. So that was cool to see some of the bands in contention for Bloodstock as well.
Good times.
Do one more question.
Ben Wilmot says, Jamie Jaster, shout out Jamie Jaster.
Yes,
big shout. Has a segment on his podcast called Metalheads Doing Non-Metal Things. When you're not listening to, moshing to, or writing about metal, what do you all like to get up to in your spare time? Brackets, other than drinking.
Yeah, El, you pisshead. We are not very rock and roll, to be honest, with the drinking stuff. Like, if we go for a meeting with someone, it's not like, yeah, let's all get the beers and shots in. It's like, oh, I'll have an iced tea and
I'm really
just Diet Coke
drinking
for me, please.
I'm just really shit at it. It just makes me feel sick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty good at drinking, which is why I try not to do it too much.
I could do spirits, Jaeger, vodka, whiskey.
But what do you do? Al's got loads of cool hobbies.
What do I do? Well, Merlin.
Not
and
me.
Ben.
Ask Matt, Ben, yeah.
I do Tai Chi.
That is pretty cool.
So I do a normal class, which is probably what you think of as Tai Chi, which is kind of a series of movements. But I also do a second class, which is really fun. And that is a saber class. So we all have sabers and I'm learning how to use the saber in a really cool defensive way. So one of the movements I learned last week was how to slit somebody's throat. So that was really
good.
What? Yeah, that was really good.
Why would you need to know how to do that?
Because you might have to defend yourself. It's
slitting someone's throat?
It's an ancient Chinese martial art.
Oh no, I'm getting mugged. Actually, that getting mugged is horrible, but...
Yeah, so basically what you have to do is you have to get the saber.
Oh no, that guy called me a dickhead.
Well, you better watch out.
So you get, I'm terrified.
You get the saber, and the back of the saber is called the spine. And then what you do is... Like you move it across, this is how you do the movement, don't try it at home. You move it across your back, like your own spine, and then you sort of bring it over your opposite shoulder and then turn around and you kind of thrust the blade out at 45 degrees.
Jesus Christ.
And then it slits a person's throat. And I was struggling a bit with the angle and then my instructor came around and just like grabbed it as I was doing it and pretended to use it to slit her own throat and that's how I knew how to do it.
Oh my God. It's terrifying working with Elle and close to Sean from Classic Rock as well, because Sean does, was it more McGraw?
Krav Maga. It's an ancient Israeli combat art.
Yeah, and that is hard as fuck. I think one of the guys from Nile does it. We did a piece on him with it a few years ago, and that's where they literally teach you to, I'm not even joking, they teach you how to like claw people's eyes out and stuff. It's horrible.
Yeah, theirs is really dirty fighting. Tai Chi is very much about defending yourself, and it's about using minimal movements for maximum impact. And there's a lot of it about the way you position your body in order to do that, whereas Krav Maga is dirty fighting, take them out with anything you can. So me and Sean often have some good office exchanges about how we've learned to punch and what we do, and Sean's is definitely a sort of more dirty street fighting style than mine, but it is
Fuck
cool
yeah.
to just compare punching techniques and stuff in the office. It's a good laugh.
Awesome. I'm very envious and intimidated of your skills.
I'm also learning Japanese, Nihongo. And
what does that mean?
Japanese. yeah, so that was quite fun. I tried to talk to Baby Metal when they came over and they indulged me. And it's, yeah, it's been good. I did a year of evening classes on that, and now I'm just kind of learning a bit by myself because it got very intense. But if anyone wants to chat Japanese, let me know. Have a little chat.
Go for it.
Yeah.
You need so much cool stuff. I've got like, I keep saying, like, this year was the year I was going to be like, well, I'm going to do what Elle does, and I'm going to learn a martial art and, you know, relearn one of the languages I learned at school or something. Didn't do any of it. Didn't do any of it.
Well, 2020 is coming now.
2020 is coming.
Oh, I also like,
I started the year doing some yoga, actually. I've fallen off with that, but
get back into that.
Yeah,
I also like comedy improv, but I'm not very funny, so I
need to this is really ironic what you just did then. I don't know if you meant to be.
I did.
Okay, good. Fuck, that was funny.
But yeah, I only did a few weeks of that. It's something I'd like to do again. It sounds really wanky, but it's actually really funny. It's basically you just get to be silly for a couple of hours. And as somebody who's very silly, I enjoyed that.
Good. Yeah, you're putting me to shame, really. Because I live metal hell, so it never stops in my world.
You do loads of stuff. You watch wrestling, you play video games.
I'm into stuff football. Like that. Like, I love video games. I finally started. I've got hobbies. I follow and used to. I need to get back into playing football for fun. But yeah, I follow football. Currently suffering Manchester United fan.
I don't understand that.
Well, because I'm not from Manchester.
Yeah.
I told you before, my grandma's from Salford. Football comes from down the women in my family. So my grandma brought my mum up supporting United. And then my mum brought me up supporting United.
Okay.
I mean, I follow Brentford as a more local / normal football team because my stepdad's into them and I've gone to see them quite a few times. So I kind of keep an eye on them. They're in the championship at the moment, just outside the playoffs, a couple of points away. But yeah, I go out to Old Trafford a few times a year. And yeah, I play a lot of video games. I'm trying to catch up with a lot of the stuff I missed out on PlayStation, on my PS4. So I finally started The Last of Us recently, so I'm just getting stuck into that. And then I'm going to get into Alien Isolation, but I'm also, I got Switch at the end of last year, so I've been smashing through Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, because I'm a massive geek for comic books and the world of comic books. And yeah, I do like wrestling. I go to a lot of wrestling shows. I'm a big fan of Progress in the UK specifically. I follow a bit of WWE, but not quite as much at the moment. I'm quite into what AEW are doing. Shout out Jimmy Havoc, by the way. He wants to come on this podcast. We should get him on.
Yay, Jimmy Havoc.
Get Jimmy Havoc from AEW
He's
Wrestling on this podcast.
Us.
He has, but in a staged wrestling way. So please don't think he hits going around hitting L.
No, he doesn't. He's a very nice man.
No, he's a very nice man.
But
he does do the stage slaps really hard and it really hurts. So yeah, we should get him on. But yeah, love a bit of wrestling. I go running quite a bit and I go to the gym a bit. And I suddenly feel like I'm dating. So go through my interests.
In depth here, yeah.
Yeah. Just like those are my interests anyway. So there you go. That's what I like
to
do.
Well, I feel like I know you better now.
And I do like to listen to a lot of non-metal as well in my free time. Quite regularly, especially when I'm exercising. I like listening to dance music a lot. So there you go. Hope that answers your question.
I got to do Saber Tai Chi to Metallica a couple of weeks ago, and that was really good.
Oh, man, that's cool. Yeah, I loved it. Oh, goodness. Goodness.
Well.
That is it for this week. and for the last regular edition podcast of the year, I think, because next week, it's going to be our end of year special. We're recording it tomorrow, just before the future Christmas party. It's going to be banging.
That's the company that owns us.
It is, yeah. Our company's having a big old Christmas party tomorrow, so we'll be doing that. Before that, we're going to be recording the Metal Hammer review of the year. It's going to be the last podcast of 2019, so it's going to be a bumper edition. And we're going to be running through all the big stuff that happened this year, revealing our personal albums of the year, plus some other special categories we're going to be looking into as well. Things like most underrated record of the year, new band of the year, gig of the year, and many others. So I'll be going through all of that next year, next week. Bloody hell, what's wrong with me? I've already got my brain.
It's
in 2020.
Weird. The end of the year is weird.
I know.
It makes us confused.
The end of the year is nigh. So yeah, tune in next week for that. But in the meantime, have a lovely week. And you've only got about 13 shopping days left to Christmas or something. So get on it, lads.
Or 13 chocolates in your advent calendar.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to have an advent calendar.
If you are lucky enough to have an advent calendar. And if you're not, I'll send you some of the weird little Funko toys that I've got in mine. So.
Oh, that's very sweet.
No worries. See you later, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.